The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 138 of The Bugle, the official audio production of the human race. Clearly we're not that, but I like to think that someday in the far distant future, some archaeologist might dig up a recording of the show whilst excavating my pyramid. I think this is what the entire species was listening to in the early 21st century.
You're going for full mummification, aren't they?
Yeah, on a big... I've bought a plot of land.
Yep.
Trafalgar Square, mm-hmm. And put a big old pyramid there, would spice things up a bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm Andy Zoltzman, but you can call me the Overlord, or the Mighty One, or the Thunder Zolt. And I'm in the city where angels fear to tread, mostly because they're naturally rural, and have notoriously poor road sense. When will they learn not to run across roads and hope for the best? Look left, look right, then peg it. Sorry, not angels, badgers. Anyway, how do you tell the difference these days since the EU outlawed halos? Anyway, I'm in London, and with me in a location I'm going to temporarily keep secret for a special Christmas game later in the show. It's John, the maelstrom of unpitying vengeance, Oliver.
Hello, Andy.
Hello.
Hello, Buglers. Andy, Gordon Brown was a guest on our show on Monday.
Oh, yeah, did you give him a cuddle?
Well, he was surprisingly upbeat, especially for a man who had his own arse handed to him in a humiliating electoral drubbing earlier this year, and a man who was on the show to plug his book about the looming financial abyss that we are collectively staring into. In fact, for a man who is synonymous with being dour, he was creepily giggly. He certainly seemed like someone who was not remotely sorry not to be Prime Minister anymore. I couldn't tell if he was happy that he was now hated a lot less, or if he was chuckling to himself at the bucket of shit that David Cameron has just stepped in taking over his job. I could have sworn I heard him sniggering his way down the corridor, muttering, "Oh, he's absolutely f***ed. Get some, Cameron. Have a taste.
Well, I think
Who's laughing now, you sack of spuds?"
Quality accent, John.
There you go.
That's a new one for your range, isn't it? I mean, how can you not be cast in every available film?
That's my point of view, Andy.
Yeah. Well, I think we talked during the election about how all the parties seem to be doing their best to lose it.
Yeah.
Clearly,
his best was good.
He was very strong.
Also,
very strong.
This is a big upcoming weekend for the British Bulldogs in our office fantasy football league. First round of the playoffs, Andy.
Right.
Cruised into the playoffs. Now, the problem is my quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, has a concussion. And
right.
I would just like to take this opportunity to give a quick message of support to Aaron in this, the final few hours before what is a crucial game for me. Aaron, it's John Oliver here. I'm so sorry to hear about your concussion. I believe it's the second that you've suffered this season. Obviously, you can't be too careful with this kind of injury, but I feel it's important for me to say this. Do not f*** me, Rodgers! You are my top draft pick! Do not f*** me! Do you have any idea the amount of shit talk that goes on in my office? Of course you don't, Aaron. You're too busy getting concussions for no reason. I'm playing Tim Quigley in the playoffs, one of the cameramen at the show I work at. Do not put me in a position where every time I look at the camera, I just see Tim's middle digit peeking out the top of it. Do not f*** me, Rodgers. Take a painkiller, walk it off, grow a pair, and throw some f***ing touchdowns. Happy holidays to you and the entire Rodgers family. Lots of love, John. Now, Andy, if we also have time, now, I actually also have a Christmas message for DeSean Jackson.
Oh, yeah, oh,
my
DeSean,
number one
yeah.
wide receiver.
He's coming around for dinner on next Thursday, I think.
Well, he shouldn't be out. He reported right. an ankle problem just yesterday. And so if I can just say, DeSean, season's greetings at this wonderful time of the year. Do not f*** me, DeSean! Do not f*** me! Merry Christmas to you and yours, John.
How come he didn't merit quite such an extended?
Well, because I think, Andy, he's going to play.
Okay, right.
I think so it's an ankle tweak. He's not trained. I think he's going to play. Rodgers, I think, is out.
Right. Okay. Can you not sub someone in?
I can, like, but Rodgers, he's my number one pick, Andy. He's a points machine.
Can you not get Michael Vick?
I can't. Someone else has got him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you get extra points for dogfighting or not?
Yeah, well, you do. For inhumanity to animals.
Right.
Yeah.
He's not really scored heavily on that front this season.
Well, he's been a real disappointment this year on that front. Yeah, because you'd think you were going to absolutely hoover up points.
Anyway, this is Bugle 138, the last Bugle ever in a year whose numbers add up to three. I just think that by the year 2100, I'll be wanting to move on creatively. Sorry, John, I probably should have talked this through with you before blurting it out on air.
Yeah, was this the time or the place, Andy?
I don't know. But I'm sorry, I'm going to have to draw the line. I will not carry on doing the Bugle for more than 89 more years. There. Oh. I've said it.
Well, that just seems like a timetable that now is going to destabilise the whole Bugle, Andy.
Well, we'll see. And this is for the week beginning Monday, the 20th of December, 2010, meaning it is exactly 20 years since Ronald Reagan published his first erotic novel, The President and the Vacuum Cleaner. How autobiographical was it? I guess we'll never know now. 50 years since the British Prime Minister Harold Macmillan broke the bed in 10 Downing Street whilst trying to explain to his cabinet how a nuclear mattress could work. 100 years since the sculptor Auguste Rodin sculpted his first Christmas pantomime. Jack and the Beanstalk, people said his pantomime cow was too realistic. Did he just kidnap two actors in a cow outfit and send them to the local foundry to be cast directly into bronze? And there's a little joke for all you Rodin fans out there. And it's 160 years since Queen Victoria became the first reigning monarch of any country to use the term shake your booty.
Top story this week, a Christmas Bugle. Andy, the holiday season is upon us. Hanukkah has already been and gone. With the Jews arguably mistiming it a bit this year.
Sorry, thanks for the heads up.
Yeah, Christmas. Next year, Andy. You'll get it next year. Christmas is on the horizon like a flying reindeer in the distance of a meth addict's mind. And the Bugle is going to take a two-week holiday break. Andy is going to be hibernating for 14 days in a box stuffed with newspaper. I'm going to be in a hyperbaric chamber with Chad Ochocinco so that we can both come out stronger and faster than ever in 2011. We're both hoping Santa will bring us some more explosive pace this year. And so that we can just have some quality time together without all the distractions of the modern world. Stop tweeting, Chad. We're having dinner.
Is he in your fantasy team?
He's not. No. He was last year, but I recognised that he was going to have a rough year this year, and I was correct.
All right. Not a clash of personalities, that's what I heard.
No. So let's all just sit back, pick up a glass of eggnog, put that glass of eggnog down the sink because it's disgusting, and enjoy some Christmas stories from around the world. Christmas has become a holiday that all religions can enjoy, but it's important to remember what this is really about at heart. And I think I'll realise that Abu Dhabi has really captured the reason for the season, Andy, when it was revealed this week that a hotel there has on display a jewel-encrusted Christmas tree worth over $11 million. When you think about it, that's what Christmas is all about, Andy, celebrating the birth of Jesus Christ by erecting a 43-foot bejeweled Christmas tree in the middle of a Muslim country. They nailed it.
It's what he would have wanted. Don't use that word, John. It's Christmas, not Easter. Now, apparently, the split in costs was $10,000 went on the tree. Now, that is already an expensive tree,
right.
John. A $10,000 tree. I hope it's wireless for that price.
Yeah.
It should be touchscreen, I think, for $10,000 and Bluetooth as well. Otherwise, it's just a flashy bit of wood. Mm-hmm. And then the remaining almost over $11 million on tree bling. I mean, you know, a market's a market. Someone was bound to open it up sooner or later. Yep. You know, why should you?
Andy.
You can already get pet jewellery.
Let the system work.
And, why not trees? That's the obvious next step. Abu Dhabi, of course, is not strictly speaking, as you mentioned, or not strictly speaking a Christian country, but to be fair, they know which side their bread is buttered.
Yes.
And how many Christian countries are doing the buttering, scoffing and asking for more bread with extra butter this time.
Yeah.
And also, since when, John, was being Christian a requisite for spending $11 million on a Christmas tree?
Fact.
If it is a prerequisite for that, then I have got some explaining to do to my already angry wife. Come on, pet, we can easily pay off the $10.999 million loan I took out after Christmas. Can't you just be happy for my tree for once? What is money anyway apart from a state of mind? Don't answer that, cupcake. What is it that Jesus always used to say about money? Correct. You can't take it with you, so why not splash out $11 million on a f***ing tree? Yes, I have been defacing your Bible again. No, not the poison-tipped javelin again. I want a divorce. We're going to patch it up in Rome.
A little vignette. That's right, that's what Rome's all about, Andy. It's all about papering over the cracks of relationships. Always has been. The tree is adorned with bracelets, necklaces and watches that contain 181 diamonds, pearls, emeralds, sapphires and other precious stones. What could be more appropriate in this season of goodwill to all men, Andy, and in the middle of the biggest global recession in recent memory? It's essentially a 43-foot f*** you to the poorest countries in the world. You've got to hand it to the United Arab Emirates. 2010 has been a vintage year for stupid buildings there. But rather than sitting back and understandably basking in a job well done, they've managed to take it that extra mile by just standing back for a moment, looking at their gigantic creation and suddenly realising, do you know what this stupid building could do with? A stupid tree inside it. And lo, Andy, the developing world was sore afraid.
But so I guess one positive thing to come out of this is that I've always thought it must be very difficult to be an ambitious tree, wanting to be rich or famous or, notorious in any way, but constrained by being rather geographically restricted. But this shows that there is some hope. This Abu Dhabian celebratory has opened doors for his species, John. Instead of being made into a door, he has opened those doors. He's raised the bar instead of being sliced into panelling to help construct a bar. He wants to earn it, yeah, not become furniture.
Oh.
He's reveling in it, not
no.
Beveling, but being cut in. Anyway, he toasts your good health. He doesn't get made into posts or a wood shelf. Oh. He's made a mint. Eh? He's not made a splinter. He'll impress broads. Not be made into chess boards. He's a conifer with lots of monifer spending on stuff.
That's not bad.
Okay, it's plain you're not enjoying this. Oh. Holy shit. Elm, move on. It's Christmas, John.
It's Christmas, exactly. That would be my point, Andy, that the fact is Christmas would be the key reason to not do what you just did. Yeah.
But that's what Joseph did when Mary was in initial stages of labour, waiting to be dilated enough for the archangels to come and help her out, or whatever happened. Just a load of puns. Just relax.
Really?
Gets the release of the hormones, the pain suppressing hormones.
Andy.
What, mate?
As a Jew, could you not be any more offensive about this most holy of holidays? Short of just cradling a hammer in your arms, stroking it, saying, shh, hammer, shh, your time will come. Apparently, the hotel in UAE is still waiting to hear back from the Guinness Book of Records as to whether it's the most expensive Christmas tree of all time. And I think that the Guinness Book of Records may just have assumed that everyone presumed that it was the biggest and didn't bother getting back to them. Do we really need to rule on this? Because when you look at the facts, it's a f***ing $11 million Christmas tree. Do we really need to make this official? Does anyone think that their tree at home is worth more than that? Yeah, didn't think so. Please, someone, just tell Abu Dhabi to stop bothering us. Let's just assume everything they do is a world record until we tell you otherwise. In other Christmas news, in Oklahoma, thousands of dollars worth of donated gifts and toys for children that were being stored in a charity warehouse have been ruined after all being sprayed by a skunk. Andy, there's only one way of putting this. There's only one conclusion. That is that skunk is an arsehole. To have sprayed all of those thousands of toys must have taken that skunk a long time. And also taken a lot out of him, too. I bet he was lightheaded towards the end, desperately trying to squeeze out a final burst of noxious-smelling gas to spray into a child's doll's face. That skunk is psychotic. Such a soft target. You don't see skunks this year breaking into Goldman Sachs and spraying all their computers and fine Italian winter coats, do you? Because that would be a worthy target. Instead, yet again, skunks pick on the weakest, poorest members of society. If they find this criminal skunk, I think all the children that were going to get those gifts should be allowed to gather around and take a dump on that skunk, Andy. Teach the kids and the skunk a lesson about not being a douchebag.
For bite a bit.
Yes.
I think this is you being cynical, John. I think it was a brave and heartfelt plea against the commercialism of modern childhood.
Maybe that's it.
Yep.
Maybe it was a basically fundamentalist saying, Christian skunk.
This whole social attitude stinks. That was his very physical piece of satire.
Right, let's remember what this holiday's all about.
Yep.
And, you know, if you're going to enjoy that train set now, you'll be enjoying it at a price.
Yeah. Why not? Well, no, surely this is just teaching children
right. That
them having affordable, high-quality toys comes at a price elsewhere in the world. So what is the greatest gift you could get for Christmas? Well, being let out on bail. It's got to be pretty high up on that list.
Right.
I guess only if you are already in jail, as Julian Assange, Mr. WikiLeaks, was until yesterday. He was let out on bail after a prolonged contractual dispute. And in case anyone was wondering exactly what the circumstances are like in a British prison, he was in Wandsworth Prison. When he came out, he said these words, John. He said, "It is great to smell the fresh air of London again." So what was it like inside?
Oh, he's had a rough time.
Now, he's a man who's clearly touched on irony every now and again during the saga, as we've discussed on previous Bugles. And he came out and said that it had been a valuable experience being in jail for a week. And he said it would do all journalists good to spend some time in prison to help them understand what it's like. So this great champion of free speech and freedom of the press is now advocating all journalists should be sent to jail.
He's lost it. Sell out!
To be fair, he had just spent a decent stretch in solitary confinement in a prison built in the 1850s. Solitary confinement, although what a positive thinker would describe that as is some quality me time. And because it's nice in this hectic modern world we live in, John, to have a bit of a chance to, you know, just think things through and reassess your priorities, unencumbered by the distractions of technological society. And Assange himself clearly spends far too much time online. So it probably did his soul a bit of good to be banged up for a bit. Maybe we actually, we should all leak an annoying and embarrassing details about international relations just to get that to... Sorry, that wasn't why he was in prison, was it? Was it? Was it? Was it?
I think you made your point. Of course, Christmas is also about must-have items. You know, Tickle Me Elmo was all the rage. And, of course, this year, the big present that parents are running out last minute to get for their children is the replica detachable Silvio Berlusconi penis. It's everywhere, Andy. I really think next year that the most sensible suggestion for Italy, and one that definitely is most palatable to the Italian taxpayer, is that the marble detachable penis is actually surgically attached to Silvio Berlusconi himself, and his actual penis is welded onto the statue. I think that might actually make their politics less complicated.
It's very good. You can the one I got from the shop the other day, the Berlusconi Wang. You can, if you squeeze it, a laser comes out of the tip.
Yes.
The Berlusconi.
God.
It projects right wing propaganda onto the ceiling.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Well, that's clever.
Yeah.
That's clever.
Time now for the Bugle Christmas game. Well, if there's one thing Christmas is about, and we've already discussed several things it's about, it is the prolonged agony of childbirth as proof that God hates women. But if there's another thing...
This is not as festive as I was hoping it would be, Andy.
I'm just trying to...
Okay.
I'm just trying to provide some balance, John.
For the record, I love Christmas, Andy.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, but it never does you harm to see the other side.
Okay, all right.
It just provides false hope that the rest of the year cannot possibly hope to live up to. Life is not all tinsel and chocolate coins, John, as the recent financial crisis around the world has proved. Don't shoot the messenger, mate. Right, anyway. But there's another thing Christmas is about, other than the prolonged agony of childbirth.
What?
It is the fact that just because you were born surrounded by farm animals doesn't mean you'll necessarily grow up acting like a pig. And if there's one more thing that Christmas is about, it is that if you're such a wise man, how do you consider acceptable behaviour to pitch up to a kid's birth, give him a swanky gift, and then f*** off again for the rest of his life?
Yeah, sure.
Not a word.
Yeah.
Not during his difficult teenage years, not during his later brushes with the law, his ultimately fatal brushes with the law. The law. That is the law of the land at the time. No excuses. And if there's one more thing, John, it's playing Christmas games. That's what Christmas is all about, like charades, Trivial Pursuits, and Girls v Boys Boxing. Is that just my family? Yeah. Or old traditional English indoor games like Blind Bert's Eyeball, where you have to blindfold one of the players, spit a spherical stone into his face, and then they have to guess who spat it. Granny's Snout Harp, where you try to play a tune on an elderly relative's nose, cheeks and jowls by slapping them around their old faces and twanging their baggy skin. And the best tune wins. And also the famous old English game, the Running Bollock Smash game. Pretty self-explanatory, that one. Coming back into fashion. Yep. Well, you know, you can only take a run-up and you smash some. Anyway, but apparently the mahogany hedgehog paddles have been selling like hotcakes this Christmas. And don't forget those imitation ivory splinter tweezers and the new automatic spine counter to definitively resolve those heated disputes about whose bollocks copped the spikiest smash. But anyway, the Bugle has signed an exclusive game-playing deal with the International Charades Foundation to launch the first ever game of audio charades. Uh-huh. And the first clue, John, is to guess the place where you are recording this festive gift cast from. So here's audio charades. Pay attention, I'll describe it.
Okay.
Three fingers in the air.
Yep.
Two fingers in the air. One finger taps on the forearm, tugging the ear with the finger and thumb, opening and shutting the mouth quickly, shaking the head, opening and shutting the mouth quickly, nodding the head, one finger on the nose, pointing another finger outwards. So I'm assuming you all got sounds like talk, then York, the second word. So, anyway, focus, Buglers. Three fingers in the air, two fingers on the arm, pinch the ear again, cup one hand just in front of the left side of the chest, lift the cup hand up and down a few times, shake the head, guess again, cup the hand in front of the chest again, bounce it up and down a couple more times, squeeze it, shake the head again, no it is not boob, shake the head again, nor is it wap, stroke over the air in front of the chest in a convex motion a couple of times, cup it, nod your head, you've got it, it does sound like titty, nod your head again, finger on the nose. Yes, the third word is indeed city. One finger in it. I cannot bail out of this thing until it's done. Tug the ear again. Act out opening a heavy door, sitting down, pulling over some kind of reinforced seatbelt device, pressing a button, shaking about frantically, stopping, removing the safety belt, opening the door again, looking surprised. That's right, I was acting out, going back in time in a time machine. Digging vigorously, dragging something heavy and corpse-like into the dug hole, chucking some stuff in after it, filling up the hole. Yes, I was there trying to act out the ancient Saxon burial ground of Sutton Hoo. It sounds like that, only without the Sutton. New, that is correct. New York City.
Yep.
Happy Christmas, everyone. Happy Christmas. Bugle feature now, and Armageddon is here! Yay! It's Christmas and the end of the world simultaneously. What a combination that is. Go out with a slightly awkward family dinner. And it does seem, John, that the planet is pretty much 100% f***ed out. The Cancun Climate Summit, again, agreed to think about maybe agreeing on some stuff at some point. So, once again, that buck has been very much passed. And also, we're at increasing risk from being destroyed by an asteroid, apparently, according to some scientists somewhere. And here in Britain, we can see this, that we have Armageddonic weather at the moment, John. I mean, it's a miracle I'm here today, because just as I was leaving to come to the recording today, literally a centimetre of snow fell. And miraculously, and I can only think it was a Christmas miracle, the train was only 5 minutes late. Whereas usually, I'd be cancelled and they'd be like...
Oh, it's the Polar Express in action, Andy. The snowfall this week and the last couple of weeks has brought lots of Europe to a complete standstill and has caused widespread panic. No one more so than a lady in Chatham, England, who apparently dialed 999 to report the theft of a snowman from outside her home. She said she thought the incident required their involvement because she used pound coins for eyes and teaspoons for arms of the snowman. And during the emergency call, the woman reportedly said, and I quote, "It ain't a nice road, but you don't expect someone to nick your snowman." Andy, it's come late, but I think that's my favourite sentence of the year. It's both profound and deeply ridiculous. In a way, it could sum up so much of what has happened to the world in 2010. It ain't a nice road that we all live on, but you still don't expect someone to nick your snowman. Translate that into Latin and make it the new motto for the UN. In fact, if they don't want it, that should be the motto of the Bugle.
Your emails now, and thank you to those of you who've alerted us to very, various, very important news stories from around the world, including this extremely sad news, and it brings me no pleasure to break this in the special Christmas Bugle. But this, a number of you have emailed in on this. This one comes from someone who can only bring themselves to sign themselves a distraught listener. My friends, the unspeakable has happened. Giuliani seems to have given up his fight for the 2008 presidential nomination.
No, is that true?
Yep. As of 9th of December 2010, 7:27 GMT, his site is no longer available to take donations.
Why? Why?
Quitter!
You're not out of it yet.
You've let us all down, Giuliani.
Oh.
What kind of example is this setting to the young people of America?
How can we trust you as a viable candidate in 2012 if you just walk away from the 2008 election?
Well, it's only just... It's not even 3 years since you were knocked out. Come on, man. Well, if we'd had that attitude in the war, we would be doing this podcast in a mixture of German and Japanese.
Konnichiwa, mein Herr.
And this arguably even greater story, and I don't know how true this is, but I do hope it is entirely true. Emailed in by Benny, who writes... Don't worry about that spy shark is the subject. There's no longer anything to fear from the killer Israeli commando spy shark. A drunken Serbian jumped on its head and killed it. And
whoa,
links
whoa, whoa,
to
whoa, whoa,
a...
Hold on. Go back to the start there. Read that again. I hear that right?
Yeah, a drunken Serbian jumped on the killer spy shark's head and killed it.
What?
This is from the well-known news source Macedonia Online. And
that's reliable.
Under the headline, Sharks Wary of Drunk Serbs. Dragan Stevic of Serbia is the new Egyptian hero who killed a large shark which had previously terrorised numerous tourists. The Serbian hero was too drunk to remember what had happened. But one of his friends who witnessed it, the incident explained it for the Belgrade-based media. He said... He explained that Dragan had decided to go to the beach to swim after a long night of drinking. As Dragan and his friends approached the beach, he saw a fairly high position jumping board utilised earlier in the day by divers. This is a quote from his friend. Dragan climbed onto the jumping board, told me to hold his beer, and simply ran to jump. There was no time for me to react or to try to stop him. He just went for it. He jumped high, and he plunged down to the sea. But didn't make as much of a splash as we thought he would. But the reason for this was apparently... as he landed straight on the shark. Killed it instantly. Now, the Egyptian police found the shark washed out on the beach the following morning. Oh, God, I hope that's true.
Oh, my God.
If only a drunken Serbian had jumped on Hitler's head when he went swimming one day.
Oh.
He explained when he was able to swim to shore, told his friends he twisted his ankle, telling them the water was not that soft.
Soft.
So, anyway, congratulations to Dragan Stevic, Stevic of Serbia. The shark killer extraordinaire. That is one hell of a drinking story.
It's a different...
That is almost as good as Neil Armstrong's.
That's an alternative ending to Jaws. We're going to need a bigger boat. Yes. Or the same size boat and one drunken Serb. We have another great email here. It's not so much the email itself as how it ends. It says, Dear gentlemen of the Bugle, including but not limited to Andy, John, Chris, Tom and Ped, What do young scholars look for in a university? A reputable Ivy League or Oxbridge name that will help them network upon their graduation? A faculty of renowned scholars, great minds who will foster new skills and challenge them to think in new ways? Hot undergraduate co-eds? No, clearly the answer is a northern location in the United States where the snow falls early, wet and often, such that it is ideal for snow-based penis-shaped construction projects as depicted herein. And he has a... he shows... picture of a frankly enormous snow penis. Now, as if that wasn't enough, Andy, and it is enough. It's enough for an email. It justifies...
That must be a good 9 feet.
It's huge.
Yep.
And it more than justifies electronic communication. However, it ends like this. Cordially, Tom Dine, CEO and founder of fuckyouchris.com. Now, on a whim, we typed fuckyouchris.com into the internet, and it turns out Tom Dine is the CEO and founder of that website, which actually exists. So I now give my official support to fuckyouchris.com, which is available on the internet. It's the new Amazon.
Chris not here this week to defend himself. He's f***ed off to Australia. We have Ped here. Instead, Ped, are you for or against the F*** you, Chris, site?
I paid for the hosting.
Oh, boy. Very good. Very good. Well done, Tom. Congratulations.
Another snow wang news. A number of you have sent in the photograph of the snow drawn into the snow by the Eiffel Tower, which has been entertaining tourists this week. Yes. Competition results now, and the competition has been running slightly formlessly for a couple of weeks, in which you have to tell us how much the Bugle cost you, listening to the Bugle cost you, in order to win a copy of my sister's book, or tickets to my Soho Theatre show, January the 13th and 15th, in London's prestigious West End. This one came in as a strong runner on the subject, The Bugle Almost Killed Me. Dear John, Andy, Chris, Ped and the ghost of Tom, in order of ascending transparency. I've nearly died, and I blame the Bugle. About 2 weeks ago, I was happily loading the newest Bugle onto my iPod as I got ready for work. My job is an unbearably mundane secretarial position at a small clinic, and the only way I get through the day is to listen to an eclectic mix of podcasts and music as I deal with annoying elderly patients that feel the need to complain to me about everything. These results usually result in making me clean up after people that seem to miss the toilet in the bathroom, trying to prevent senile old ladies from ordering pizzas to the clinic, and yelling at transportation companies for picking up the wrong old person. The only way I keep my sanity is my iPod. I usually have one bud in my ear constantly, and I tune people in and out when the need arises. However, on that particular day 2 weeks ago, I realised as I arrived at work that every song on podcast was erased from my iPod. The only thing left was the entire 134 episode run of The Bugle.
Oh no, I hope you took the option of silence there.
My entire ability to cope at my job is dictated by listening to my iPod, but everything was gone. Everything but The Bugle. It was then that I made a decision. One that in retrospect was the worst one I could have made. I would listen to The Bugle, only The Bugle, for 8 hours straight. It started off well enough. I enjoy the newest episode, listening to the witty banter of Andy and John as they dispense their trademark inanity. F*** you! Soon after, I began to experience the infantile Bugles of the early years. F*** you again! Experiencing Andy's Florence Nightingale fetishism. It is not fetishism. It is perfectly normal and natural. And John's angelic singing voice. You can have that. All anew. But as is necessary, I had to turn my attention to various tasks that my job required of me, leaving the Bugle a subconscious white noise in my ear. That's how it's supposed to be listened to. As the hours dragged on and the explosion of the Bugle increased, my mind began to slowly cloud. I was making mistakes, not being able to understand simple commands. As I understand it now, the constant stream of Bugle was poisoning me, slowly liquefying my brain and organs into a kind of slurry. My eyes watered, my stomach ached. However, I trudged on, making it through the workday, never suspecting the cause. I thought I'd eaten a bad burrito. When I got home, I took a turn for the worse. I'd stopped listening to the Bugle, but the effects were lingering. I was unable to keep anything down, vomiting with the force of a fire hose. My symptoms multiplied, and the next 2 weeks became a vague blur of Bugle-related fever dreams that I'm too afraid to recall. Suffice it to say, I was using my paid time off for the absolute suckiest vacation ever. Now, you might say the cause of my illness was a nasty flu that was going around. It was the fluctuating Chicago weather that exasperated my condition, or it's from being around unwell patients and cleaning up after them. Well, you would be wrong, because I know the truth. It was 8 straight hours of the Bugle. I've learned my lesson. The human body can endure much, but it cannot handle a pure concentration of utter bullshit for such an extended amount of time. Never again, Sabina S. So, great. So, we can drive you close to death.
Oh, boy.
That's, yeah. I'm not sure that's going to be my intro line at my next live gig. I will push you to the precipice of annihilation. So there's a copy of my sister's book coming to you, Sabina. So email us with your details, or we will hunt you down. And the winner of tickets to my show is Tom Locke from York University, who writes, "Dear John and Andy, I'm studying at the University of York and paying £3,290 a year for the privilege, listening to an average of 38 minutes of Bugle each week. I've calculated that your dulcet voices cost me £12.37 per annum. This is in the same ballpark as the cost of contact hours with my tutors, £90.14, but pales in comparison to the amount of money I spend sleeping, £1,370.83. And how much money have you spent working out how much money you spend on things?
Yes.
So, congratulations, you two are the competition winners. And Tom, certainly, Tom York, Locke there from York University, certainly one of the most important things in his winning entry was the fact that it was short, because we have overrun again. So I needed a quick one. All right, are we allowed to run competitions like that? I will probably be in court next week. Anyway, but you can still win a ticket to my show by buying it with money. And you can buy my sister's book, Answer Me This, as well.
The ultimate victory.
So that's it for this week's Christmas Bugle. Just time for the Bugle forecast. Now, John is coming back to civilization for the first time in almost 2 years this
weekend.
Weather
permitting, I'll be there tomorrow.
Yeah. And on Sunday, the biggest sporting event of the year, it is the John Oliver Memorial Football Match in Crystal Palace, where some of the old guards are going to be kicking lumps out of John.
Scores are going to get settled.
Yeah, you're starting on the bench. You've got to earn your place back, John. Well, what's your forecast for the game? I mean, how's your form going to be?
It's hard to say, Andy. I mean, my passing is not gone. I still have that explosive pace. So it's just for me about bedding in for the first 15 minutes and then really starting to express myself.
Right, okay. Well, you still think you've got that, you know, that classic part of your game, that ducking out of tackles and...
That's not. I never had that in my game, Andy. So I don't think it'll suddenly got here.
I just hope you don't pick up the ball and hurl it 60 yards forward and then
start
headbutting people.
Bring out my hockey stick and whack the ball in through the five hole.
So that's it, Buglers. We'll have a full report on the John Oliver testimonial in the first new Bugle of 2011, which will be. In 2011. But the next 2 weeks, we have next week the second half of the bonus Bugle from a few weeks ago, the second half of our legendary gig at the Frontline Club in 2005. And in fact, I think the founder of the Frontline Club is the guy who is currently hosting Julian Assange
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So, maybe you could stay with him as well, John, when you're.
I might give him a wide berth.
He wasn't that bad.
I need to get back here in January. Oh, no, not the guy. I mean Assange.
All right. Well, that's a bad gig. Vengeance is best served cold. So that will be next week. And then the week after, we'll have a best of 2010 to see you through the new year. But in the meantime, Buglers, have the greatest Christmas of your lives. Bye-bye.
Bye!
Happy Hanukkah.
Mazel tov from everybody here at fyoucris.com.
The official website of the Bugle since the paywall went up.